Isn't it time you lived life on your own terms? If not now, when? Visit abrilliantgamble.com for more information on Blair's new exciting online coaching program. Midlife doesn't have to be a crisis. It's a time to rethink who you are and what you really want from your work, your life, and yourself. Sacrificing your soul stops here. It's time to make some plans, make them happen, and live the life you deserve. With interviews, stories from her own adventures, and expert insights, here's your host, best-selling author, speaker, and coach, Blair Palmer.
Hello and welcome to episode 104 of the Brilliant Gamble podcast. I hope you are really well and I hope you had a fantastic new year. Welcome to 2019. It's very exciting. I have got some really, really good feelings about this year. I think it's going to be great for me. As you know, we've got lots of changes going on in our lives over here on the farm, on the small holding. But I also have a feeling that this is going to be a big year for you. And I hope that this show and the posts that and blogs and things that I'm writing and, of course, our online program, I hope all of that is going to play a part in helping you to make some real, bold, sustainable change in your life this year. And it is with that in mind that we kick off with a really fantastic interview this episode. We are going full on menopause in the show today, and I will tell you why that's important. Because the menopause affects us all. It affects you or your partner or your colleague or your daughter or your mum. Someone in your life right now is experiencing the effects of the menopause. And for me, it's more than a physical change. It's a moment of massive personal transition. It's potentially a major reason to start a new chapter in your life. We know that having kids, leaving university to start your career, redundancy, retirement, these are all major life stages. And you'll have had your own and will in future, these kind of moments of dramatic change that are triggered by something happening in your life. But the thing about menopause is that a lot of things are happening together. A whole variety of physical changes, plus realizations about aging, lifestyle changes like the kids leaving home or your own parents needing you more, achieving a certain level in your professional life, and then thinking, well, what do I want the final stage of my career to look like? All of these things are happening at the same time, just exactly when you're hitting the menopause. And that is what I wanted to talk to today's guest about. Andrea McLean is a journalist and broadcaster, and of course she's co-presenter of the daytime chat show Loose Women. She's just published a new book called Confessions of a Menopausal Woman and launched a new website called This Girl Is On Fire. Very clever. And I was delighted when she agreed to be on the show. In this conversation, we just range over the whole topic of menopause and midlife, from the medical and more physical changes to what aging means to us both, the liberating experience of getting older, and what success and failure mean when you've got life experience. Now, you will be able to hear my dogs in the background. Almost certainly, they were going completely loopy during our conversation. And if you listen right to the end of the show, the very end of the show, just before I hand over to Ivy, I have a little outtake for you that I hope you'll enjoy. But let's not waste any more time with me chit-chatting on. Let's go to the interview. Andrea, it's so great to have you on the show. You're looking wonderful.
Thank you so much. It is just before Christmas. We are on our knees in this house, so I appreciate the sentiment. Thank you.
I mean, I know we're all with you. We were just saying before I pressed record that I just can't wait for this week to be over. I keep thinking it's Friday and I keep being disappointed. It's not Friday yet.
Not yet. I know. It's only Wednesday. I know. How did that happen?
It's going too slowly. On the other hand, I'm not at all prepared, so these extra days are quite helpful.
Can I whisper something to you? Don't tell anyone, and hopefully nobody else is listening. after I finish talking to you, I'm going panic buying because I have not bought a thing. Nick knows. He knows I have nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
Yeah. No. Actually nothing.
Actually nothing.
No, that's really bad.
I know. And my son gave me a list and some of it is from Amazon. I don't even know if they'll still deliver. So, slight hot sweats, but it'll be all right. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk plenty about hot sweats in a minute, because that's one of the reasons that you're on, is your sweats. But let's come to it. I mean, there are lots of reasons I wanted to talk to you. I read your fantastic book, and I laughed and cried along with it, because so much of it connected with me and with friends. But maybe you can start the story. I know that, you know, for you, the menopause started quite early, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I got my first menopause light, if you like, symptoms at about 37. And that was night sweats and generally feeling a bit unsettled and that sort of thing. But for me, it kicked in properly at 42. And now it's so interesting because now I look back and think, gosh, 42 is quite young actually. And statistically, you know, they say you're 51 when you're properly hitting your stride with the menopause. So I was young, but my mum went through the menopause at 40. So for me, it was in the back of my mind. I kind of knew this would probably happen. How did it show itself? Again, the night sweats came back with a vengeance. And when people think, okay, everybody gets a little bit hot at night, that's not what night sweats are. Night sweats are when you are sleeping, minding your own business. It's not like you're stressed because you're standing in a room full of people, and obviously that can make you feel flushed. You wake up and literally I could wring my pajamas or nightie or t-shirt or whatever I happen to be sleeping, literally wring it out. There was no, oh, I'll turn the pillow over onto the cool side. There was no cool side. And the duvet was soaked. I mean, it was like someone's thrown a bucket of water over me. And you have to get up and change the sheets, change yourself. And it's actually quite distressing because that wakes you up. Then you can't get back to sleep. Then you actually wake up and you're cold because you've sweated so much. And then you've got, it's just a nightmare. And sometimes that would happen a few times a night. And so they came back with a vengeance. But that was the kind of nighttime symptom. For me, the main symptom, I suppose, was my moods changed. And I have quite a sunny disposition. I'm naturally quite a chirpy person. And that chirpiness just went. So I was very snappy with the kids. And even, you know, don't get me wrong, I find my kids really annoying, just as annoying as every other parent finds their own children. But I could normally keep a lid on it and keep the mum face. Okay, oh, right. I couldn't keep the mum face. I was finding everything they did really annoying. That wasn't right. And I could see them reacting to me like, oh, God, what's up with mum? And then so it was night sweats, mood changes, and then overwhelming anxiety. Now, again, anxiety is a word that's kind of dotted about, and everybody thinks, I get a little bit anxious. The anxiety, real, if you like, all I can describe it as, it's an overwhelming fear, it's a foreboding. And rather than that, oh God, wouldn't it be awful if that happened, you're feeling it as if it has happened. So every little thing that you've ever worried about becomes magnified to Godzilla size, and you worry about it to the point, and I still get this today. It's not like there's you take a tablet and it disappears. The other day I was in a coffee shop and I could feel it coming, and I could feel like you're either going to be sick or you're going to faint. And all I wanted was a girl to serve me, just serve me so I can get out in the street and walk and hopefully walk it off. For me were my key signs. Is that a bit long and bit of a long answer?
No, I mean, off I went. I think it's so helpful because, you know, the night sweats or the hot flashes is the kind of classic symptom. It's almost considered a bit of a joke. I mean, culturally. But firstly, I don't think that people realize until they've had the sweats themselves, the extent of it. And this, you know, I think, so that's not one of my symptoms. And so for me to really understand the, it's not one of my symptoms yet. So for me to really understand the extent of it is very, very helpful. But then some of these other symptoms around the anxiety and the anger, the rage as I refer to it,
yeah.
You have those symptoms and not know that this was the menopause, couldn't you? Did you know because of the family history, or were you surprised yourself that this was happening?
No, I knew because, like I say, because my mum went through it at 40, and we were teenagers at the time when mum went through it. And again, I'm very like my mum, so we're both very steady Eddies. And my mum, and that was how I knew I was changing, because my kids were looking at me like how we would look at my mum. I can remember mum raging about something. We were in the car. And I mean, proper raging. And she just didn't do stuff like that. And we were sitting in the back seat a bit like this. And my dad pulled over and he turned to the back seat to face us. Now, my dad is a very gruff Glaswegian. So women's problems, even now, you know, he knows I've written a book about women's things, but he still refers to it as, oh, Andrea, you know, that Confessions of a Menopausal Woman, women's things. He's very proud that I've written a book, but it's not something he would ever get into a discussion about. So that sets the scene for my dad. So he pulls over on the side of the road and he turns around to us and he goes, girls, your mum's going through the change. So we're going to need to be very patient. My sister and I sat at the back going, what does that mean? What is this change? We had no clue. And that was all we were ever told. Mum was going through a change. And just to set the scene as well, it was the 80s, so Teen Wolf was up, and we were genuinely concerned that my mum was turning into Teen Wolf, clearly a 40-year-old werewolf. So when it started happening to me, my kids were looking at me with that same expression. I realised, right, okay, this is happening now. So I went and got some help.
Yeah. And what was that help?
Well, interestingly, I'd already had sort of bits and bobs of help beforehand, because I had, like I say, it started when I was 37. So I'd kind of seen people. I had tests done, and yes, it turned out that my hormones were not as they should be. I'd been given estrogen gel, and that had made a difference. But then life got in the way. I never went back. It was one of those things. And it was probably a few years later before I thought, right, I really need to start addressing this. Randomly, I ended up seeing the doctor who properly prescribed me HRT, because this is the joy of life. This is, you couldn't plan this. I went to my GP to have my coil removed and she couldn't get it out. So she said, I know a lady who's really good at this sort of thing. So she recommended me to this doctor in a different surgery. And it turned out that she was a specialist in the menopause. So not only did she whip my coil out and change it, anyone who's had a coil knows there is no whipping and changing. It's quite something. But basically, while she was examining me, she said that she thought I looked like I was showing signs of menopause, because obviously things change internally as well. And we had a talk about it. And she said, yeah, you definitely are. If these are your symptoms, you definitely are. And so she put me on HRT. And I was then lucky enough to take this prescription back to my GP, explain that I'd seen a specialist who, she was on the NHS at the time, through disgusting cuts in the NHS. She's no longer on. I just happened to fit in that window just at that time. And now my GP prescribes me the medication that I need. But that was then, and I was on a very light dose. Clearly, I then went into surgical menopause when I had my hysterectomy. So that's a game changer. That's like falling off a cliff.
Yeah. I mean, that when I was reading that part of the book, that sounded like so sudden. I mean, not only recovering from major surgery, which is bad enough in itself.
Yeah.
Good enough. But the then it triggering this full on, you know, all singing, all dancing menopause. Yeah. And how was that different to what you'd had up until that point?
the intensity. And what's really interesting is, obviously, there's in the book, I talk about the fact that, one, I didn't want to talk about having a hysterectomy in the first place because of the connotations of going through the menopause. I knew I would go into full surgical menopause. And you'll remember, Linda Robson. Thank you, Linda Robson. Linda Robson changed the course of my life, because if she hadn't outed me on Loose Women by saying, you know, you've got something to say, Andrea, haven't you? And making me talk about it. And she did it from the love of her heart, because she said, basically, you need to say something else, people will think you've been fired, which I hadn't considered. What then happened was there was this tsunami of response from women who got in touch with me, telling me about the fact that they were going through the menopause. And that then prompted me to, obviously, to write the book. What's interesting was the book has then led on to a website, which is called This Girl Is On Fire, which is started off as a menopausal site and has now just, it's evolved. It's now about positivity and making you feel like your best possible self. And one of the great things about the site is I've been interviewing lots of women who are going through similar experiences. And going back to your initial question about what was the difference between a normal menopause and a surgical menopause, I interviewed an incredible woman about a month ago who, she was told that she needed to have a full hysterectomy because she had fibroids. Mm-hmm. And during that time, there was no consultation about the fact that if she had her ovaries removed, she would go into full-blown surgical menopause. And so she did. She had this operation. She fell off the cliff hormonally, then discovered, she can't actually take HRT. So she's been abandoned and basically left to fend for herself. And she's now working it through. Obviously, there are different supplements that you can take, herbal supplements. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because a lot of people think that the menopause is one thing and that there is one solution fits all. And it's really important that women know that that's not the case. Every woman's menopause is similar and different, but a surgical menopause is up here compared to a normal menopause, because your engine's been removed, your estrogen source has gone. You know, if you took out any kind of gland in your body that produces whatever it is that your body needs, and then you're told, right, bye, trot along, just get on with it by yourself, you'd be completely fine without insulin. Who needs insulin? But that's what happens when a woman's ovaries are removed. So for me, the fact that, you know, this conversation about being brave, I was called brave when I said that, you know, I was having my hysterectomy, which has led to a book, which has led to a website. To me, it's about starting a conversation. It's the very thing that you're doing now. It's encouraging women to talk and be open.
Yeah.
I'm very open. I'll answer anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic, really. And this idea that of talking about it, you know, my mum had a hysterectomy in her 30s. Uh-huh. We were very young. I only remember it because my grandma came over to take care of us for a few days while mum was in hospital. And I don't remember any consequences, because I was small, I don't remember any consequences of that. But I'm also pretty sure that she didn't, I mean, I'll ask her, but that she didn't talk to anyone about what you're talking about. But in any case, the bigger topic around menopause, whether it's triggered by a hysterectomy or whatever it's triggered by, just normal aging process,
yeah,
it's a big secret. Why do you think that women don't want to talk about it? What are some of the barriers psychologically, in a sense, to talking about it?
I think there are many reasons and there are many barriers. I think you've used some really good words there. I think culturally we're not encouraged to talk about it. I think we do live in a very patriarchal society where women's issues, going back to my dad, you just don't talk about them, which to me seems rather insane, because you're talking about half the population of the entire planet. And it seems very odd that a woman is encouraged to talk about pregnancy. If you're pregnant, clearly it's there for all to see, and it is an extremely, it's a natural, wonderful, beautiful thing that is to do with the evolution of mankind. But there are all these other facets that are to do with a woman's body. Oh, let's talk about, because that's just too awful. And I think the reason we don't want to talk about it is because it makes men feel uncomfortable, and we don't want to be seen as old. Two things. Because even if the deputy governor of the Bank of England can use the term menopausal to talk about Britain's economy and use it as a descriptive term to say that it's past its usefulness, that it's, you know, no longer buoyant, it's stagnant. And to use that word, which is something that half the population of the planet are going to go through, just shows how far we've got to go to change the perception of the menopause. It's just wrong. And whilst I'm incredibly open and I feel very strongly that we need to talk about it, I think we need to be careful how we talk about it. And I personally think humor and coming at it from a sort of slightly gentle but strong, like a velvet glove perspective, is the best way to do it. If we start hammering and banging on, that's exactly how men will see it, that they're just banging on. Whereas I think if we start to educate men, younger men, so that they will grow up knowing that this is a perfectly normal transitional phase that a woman will go through, it won't have the stigma. So for example, you know, men might think, well, what's the menopause got to do with me? It's got everything to do with you, because your mum will experience it, your sister will experience it, your girlfriend, your wife. Even if you have none of those things, a work colleague will experience it. It could be someone who works alongside you, it could be your boss, it could be, you know, you might think this has nothing to do with you, but there's the man and there's a 360 degree thing, and you're surrounded by women who are going to go through it. And if men are educated to deal with it with empathy and support, life will be easier. So for me, I think that's where we start. And I think we are making some really great strides in terms of introducing it into the workplace, and not in a, oh, for the love of God, why are these women talking about this? Just so that there's a level of understanding. I think that is a step forward. But also women need to talk about it within the family, because you mentioned your mum didn't mention it. We had one conversation with my dad facing us in the back of a car. That was all we had. My son is 17, my daughter's 12. So they're hormonal kids. You know, my daughter's just starting her journey with hormones. And my son clearly started his journey a while ago. but I'm very honest about it and open. And what I say to them is that, you know, hormones rule our lives. We like to think that, you know, we're this evolved species and aren't we smart and everything else, but really we're all mammals, and it is perfectly normal. And everything that you're feeling is normally driven by hormones. So if, just as I need to support you as you're entering this journey and let you feel that it's okay to feel a bit bumpy and up and down, but you need to learn to manage it, because the whole world will fall apart if everyone acts on their rages or their whatever. You also need to appreciate that I'm coming to the end of my hormonal journey, and it's making me feel like this. And I think actually it's quite an exciting time in our evolution, if you like, because parents are able to have these conversations. You know, kids nowadays are so much more clued up than we were, because I think parents just didn't talk about it. And I think they just didn't talk about anything, really.
We're in an exciting time in the history of the world that we can actually talk about this. And I also think it's an exciting time for a woman. I mean, for everything that you've said about, you know, the sweats and the rage and the whatever other discomforts, weight gain, whatever it might be that's going on that's kind of distressing, there's also something happening, I think, when I talk to friends of mine who are going through this, a kind of awakening, a kind of coming into your power. Is this something that, it sounds like this is something that you have experienced as well?
100%. And for me, again, in the book, it's so, I document it with brutal honesty. And that's why I called it Confessions of a Menopausal Woman, because some of it is really tough. And I didn't want women to get a kind of Disneyfied version of this woman that you see on the telly going, this is what I do to get through the menopause. I found it so easy. I just literally did a little bit of Pilates and some pelvic floor and I'm good to go, because life is not like that. So I am very, very honest in the book. But I got to a point where I thought, you know what, this is happening. And I can either lie down and let this run over me, or I can get up and turn it around. And I'm a really big believer in trying to take a negative and turn it into a positive. And anyone who knows me, whether it's personally or, you know, followed my chaotic life on the Mail Online, I have been through some really terrible times in my life. And the only thing that sort of kept me going is to sit up and think, right, this has happened. How do I turn this negative into a positive? So for me, I decided to try and turn it on its head and utilize that fire, utilize that heat, that hot flash, turn it into something really positive. That's where this came out. That's where the This Girl Is On Fire website came about. I might as well have a slug while I'm at it. Because it's about the whole ethos of the site is, I think women are sick and tired of feeling sick and tired. Mm-hmm. And we are no longer invisible. So for me to put something together that encourages women to take that fire and utilize it in a way that works for you. For example, lots of women maybe stop work because they're having kids. And about the time when the menopause happens is normally when the kids have left home. Mm-hmm. And it, empty nest syndrome and all of that. Try and turn that around and find a way so that you still have a voice. You still have, what is your passion? What is your fire? What were you before your children? Now, some women don't want that, and that's completely fine in itself. But if there is a tiny little voice in your head that says, do you know what? Actually, I've always wanted to do this, but I can't now because I feel like I'm too old and, you know, I haven't tried it for so long, and why would anybody want to listen to me? Actually, everybody wants to listen to you. Everybody wants to hear you. You have a voice. You're not invisible. You have 20 odd years of experience of holding yourself together. And that's just running a family. So for me, yes, I think it is really, really important, especially for women of our age, to kind of harness that. And I think that, men are, I know I talked before about changing the narrative with men. I need to also say that there are a lot of incredibly encouraging, supportive, enlightened, if you like, men. And I'm very blessed. My husband is one of those who's right there alongside you going, yes, do it. This could be your time. You're just going to do it differently to how you thought you were going to do it in your teens or your 20s or your 30s. So yes, for me, I've 100% harnessed it. And I'm pushing forward with it. And my mission now is to really encourage women to get fired up, but in a really good way. And just to remember what it felt like to feel joy. Because I think sometimes life is really hard. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we forget what joy feels like. And actually joy is like a little fire. It's like a little tiny spark. It's in the pit of your tummy, and you feel a bit warm, and you feel good about something. And actually, we're so busy running around coping and everything else, we forget. And so that's what I would like to do. And I took something which was a huge negative, and I'm really determined to turn it into a huge positive and show women that they can do the same thing. My negative might be different to your negative, but our positives can be the same.
Yeah. It resonates with me so much what you're saying, because I think that if we try, you know, all of this change is happening, and you likened it in a sense to the scale of change that happens to kids, you know, hormonal kids, teenagers. But the great thing about being a kid at that time is that your life is about to change massively. So you are coming to the end of being at home and being at school, and you're embarking on. Yeah. It marks a proper change in lifestyle. You're about to go and get your first job, or go away to university, or go traveling around the world, whatever it might be. But things are really going to change in your lifestyle. You're not expected to go through all that change and still maintain the lifestyle you had when you were 10.
Yeah.
If we expect to maintain the lifestyle that we had in our 20s and 30s, despite all these changes, I think that's one of the reasons that you can end up very tired and very grumpy, that your lifestyle hasn't changed, but you have changed, and your body has changed, and what interests you, what is meaningful to you has changed, but you're not going to make any massive changes in your life. It just feels to me like this is the perfect opportunity to say, this is a new chapter. I need it to be quite significantly different.
I 100% agree, 100%. And I think we can hear those words and feel absolute terror and think, okay, but what do I do? But I don't know how to do anything. And where can I go? And I get all of that. And I get days like that. I get a lot of days like that because I'm no different to anybody else. And what I then do is kind of make it smaller. In the same way that we do with our kids when it comes to their revision. Don't think of your GCSEs or your A-levels or your degree or whatever it is, that whatever stage that they're at. Break everything down into tiny little bite-sized chunks, and then you tick it off, and I've done that, and I've done that. And actually, then you look back and realize, well, I'm over here, and I never thought I could even get to there. But you've done it tiny bit by tiny bit by tiny bit, and it comes right back to what brings you joy, What do you like doing? And I think, I think that's a question that as women, we don't ask ourselves that often enough, because it seems slightly vain, greedy, slovenly, and none of these are positive words. And what do you mean? You just think about yourself and what you like? Well, you're a terrible wife and mother if you are daring to think about yourself before anyone else. But again, the way I see it is when you're on the airplane and the oxygen thing falls down, you are physically told, put your own mask on first before you tend to anyone else. And I agree with that. And actually being told it on an airplane is kind of all right, because the airplane people clearly did studies and they know better than I do. So I'm not being selfish, vain, greedy and slovenly. I'm being really practical, because a happy mummy means a happy house. Or even if you are not a mummy, you're a partner, even if you're a single woman, you can't move forward unless you're happy in yourself. And it's not vain. It's not, what a waste of a life if you get to the end of it and you're 6 feet under and you never actually felt joy. And so that makes me more sad than anything else.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the reasons why women have an awakening at this point, is that they are experiencing the physical signs of aging, and that can be distressing in some ways. I've seen a thing where you said you still think of yourself as a minx, but I know that, and you totally are, but I don't feel like a minx a lot of the time, and I know a lot.
Why? I have minx a lot.
So there's lots of downsides to this aging thing. But one of the things it does is it is a wake-up call. And it does say, look, you can't deny it anymore. You can see the end. I mean, you can see the end. It's closer than it's ever been. And you have a choice at this point to just fade into the background.
Yeah.
Or to say, no, I'm actually going to live. And if not now, when exactly am I planning to do this?
Yes, exactly. And there are no rules as to how you can do this, because, for example, I don't remember when I said that I'm a minx. That makes me sound like a rotter. But yes, of course I have minxy moments. Everyone has minxy moments. Possibly it was following an espresso martini. Who knows?
Yeah, anyone would feel like a minx in that moment. Yeah,
exactly. There's caffeine and alcohol. What more do you need? But I think that, again, we are, as a culture, we're very self-deprecating. And so if I was in America and I said, you know what, feeling
really mighty fine today. Everyone will go, go girl. Whereas over here we go, who the hell do you think you are? So I think culturally we're kind of battling against that. But the key thing I agree with is if not now, then when? And I'd also add to that, why we tend to ask ourselves, why me? Oh, why me? Why has this happened to me? Actually, we should ask, why not me? Why not me over anybody else? But use it in both ways. Why not me as in, and this is something that my husband has taught me, because although I want people to feel amazing and to try things, I get just as scared as anyone else. And I'm going to a meeting and I'm pitching something and what if they don't like it? And I've got hives and the sweats and everything. And he says, but why not you? It's got to be somebody. Why not you? And actually turn that on its head. And I think from when we're a little girl, it's ingrained into us to be polite and stand to the side and not be too noisy and be good and be acquiescing. And I know I was raised like that. So actually I'm fighting nearly 50 years of information that's been ingrained in me. And actually I've realized you are allowed to be noisy. You are allowed to stand up and say things that actually people might not agree with, because for that very reason, if not now, then when? And why not?
Yeah.
It might not please everybody, but you can't please everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, for me, part of it is I'm not trying to get young men to fancy me anymore. So I'm not worried I'm worried whether they do. So I can just have a normal conversation with them and say what I think because I'm not trying to get them to fancy me. I mean, it's sort of a similar, so this idea of being slightly more invisible, or maybe let's say slightly more niche in terms of, you know, who's attracted to me,
is
very positive. I just don't know about it.
It is liberating.
Yeah.
It is liberating. I mean, I've worked for ITV for 22 years. And I had a horrible moment recently where I was speaking to a really lovely young boy. The fact that I even call him a young boy, that means I'm an old lady. And I realized I'd worked for one company longer than he'd been alive. Not even just worked, because clearly I've worked other places before. And it was like a light bulb moment. And I thought, oh my God. And I now look at everyone as like, they're like my son. And I feel very motherly towards them, and I'm constantly telling them they need to wear a coat. So that side of things, to be honest, even when I was in my 20s or whatever, talking to someone has never been about whether they fancied me or not. It's been about whether I find them interesting or not. You know, I've always been like that. I just like people. And I've never really cared what they look like, what they do, how old they are, whether they're older or younger. I just like people, and I'm drawn to something in another human being. But yeah, the thought, oh gosh, no, I would not want, no. they wouldn't even know the music that I liked, and that's a big deal.
No, all the references, all the cultural references. Yeah, no, there is something. I mean, you know, we do live in a culture that's pretty obsessed with youth. And
yes.
It's almost as though we were our real selves, the person we were meant to be somehow. We were at our peak in our 20s or 30s. But of course, that can't be true. You know, we were ourselves then as for who we were meant to be in our 20s, and we're ourselves now. And I wonder if actually, if we were to rethink it a little, we would feel like actually this is, I'm becoming the person now. This is really me evolving now. All of that was a preparation as opposed to my best days behind me.
And that is 100% what I feel. Mm. I do. And everything I've done has brought me to this place, and every lesson I've learned has brought me to this place. And that's why I feel so strongly that why the hell should you be discarded just as you've got to a point where you've got all those life lessons behind you? Never mind
working experience or anything like that. You have all these life lessons behind you, and that is not to discount anyone in their 20s or 30s. You're going through the process, and that's great, and you're learning. But we've now got to a point where we know what works and what doesn't work. We know where we are. We kind of sometimes you lose your sense of self when you're going through your middle years or your menopause. But actually, if you stop and take stock, you realize actually, this is who I am. It might not be amazing to anybody else, but this is it. And actually, I'm ready to do that now in whatever direction. So I do feel, I almost feel like a teenager again. Clearly I'm a lot more tired than I was when I was a teenager. But I do feel like I'm almost in the same position as a teen would be, like you said right at the start, about when they're about to start work, or they're going off to uni, or they're about to do something on their own. I'm ready for that now. And I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if I'm going to fall flat on my face, but actually I don't mind. I think we spend our teens, 20s and 30s really worrying about whether something's going to work or not, or how it's going to look, or will it be a mistake? And I don't care anymore. I mean, clearly I do care, because I don't want it to be a mistake, because I'll be a complete waste of my time. But I feel good enough in myself that I'm going to try it anyway. What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
I've fallen on my face plenty, and I'm still here.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that is one of the things that life experience gives you, is lots of stories of how everything worked out okay in the end.
And I think as well, when you're young, you have this image that, right, I'm going to do that, and that'll lead to that, and that'll lead to that. And success goes in one really neat little line with little moments all along it. Success looks like that. It doesn't look like a straight line. And actually, with every setback, you learn something. And I think when you're younger, you don't appreciate that. But I do now. You know, obviously, clearly, I've had things happen to me in my life that they were terrible. And I... at the time, it was awful. And do I wish they hadn't happened? Yeah, of course. But I learned something from them. And even being let down, being hurt, things not working out as I would have wanted, all of these things, as humans, we will experience at some point in our own unique, different way. But they teach you something. And I also think as well, that setbacks, disappointment, hurt, dark black times, they form a scar tissue. And they do, and they can form it around your heart, and they can form it around your soul. And I think that either you can let that close you in and refuse to feel any joy and think that the world is a dark, horrible place. World is a dark, horrible place sometimes. But actually, you need to use that scar tissue to keep you strong, not to keep the world out, because the world is happening anyway. And I think you might as well try and keep putting one foot in front of the other, because imagine going through the rest of your life without feeling that warmth in your belly, that joy. So make sure that scar tissue doesn't keep joy out. Use it as a strength.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That's such a lovely idea. Is there anything, I mean, I've been to the website, I think it's fantastic. I really encourage anyone to go there and get inspired by the articles, and lots of practical advice on there as well. What would be your, I mean, it's difficult to say this because, of course, everyone's situation is unique. And so there isn't one bit of advice that's going to apply to everybody. But is there one message that you think at this point in someone's life is maybe you wish someone had said to you that would have really, really helped you?
For me personally, lots of people said lots of different things that have kind of, because you need different sayings at different points in your life. One that really sticks out was, this too will pass. And that really sticks with me, because it's really important to remember it when things are terrible, but it's also really important to remember it when things are good. And what that does is it makes you stop and take stock of, this is a good moment. enjoy it. It could be anything. It could be that the sun finally blooming comes out and you've gone for a walk and you get that little moment where you think, this is actually really nice. Absorb it and enjoy it because it will pass. You know, your dog will rub its ear in fox poo. Something will, you'll get splashed by a car. Something will happen to ruin that moment. So enjoy it. But also at that moment when your dog rolled in fox poo or something dreadful has happened, hang on to this too will pass. So that would be my key thing. In terms of advice, buy a journal. Now, I'm not. If you don't have the money for a journal, buy, you know, get a scrapbook, get a, put it in your phone, but write down how you're feeling. And for me, it's incredibly powerful because you don't even know what you're feeling until you start writing it down because it's so in and you're so, you bottle it all up. I find it's like therapy for me. I panic sometimes. People are going to find my notebooks and think, these are the words of a crazy woman. But I've had to get past that. Write it down. And write it. I personally, I remember reading this research that proves that physically writing with a pen, it releases something in your brain that will properly let go of whatever it is that you're holding on to. That's what my advice would be. Not scribbling. It doesn't have to be good and don't show it to anybody. Stop scribbling.
God forbid, no. No. Show it to the Daily Mail. No.
No. Oh my word.
Can you imagine?
Yeah,
that would be fun for us all. Thank you so much, Andrea. It's been so great talking to you. I know that there's tons and tons here that is going to connect with people and so inspiring. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Have me on any time. I think you're great. I follow you.
Oh yeah, well, we can do all the mutual love when I've no, thank you so much.
Oh, and have a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, you too.
What a lovely lady and what a fun conversation. I hope you enjoyed that. If you're looking for more information about menopause or want to be part of a really supportive community of women experiencing menopause, then head over to This Girl Is On Fire online and sign up to the newsletter. There are some great articles on the website. It goes way beyond just being a midlife menopausal woman. I highly recommend her website and spending a bit of time there, and the book, of course, Confessions of a Menopausal Woman. And if this is the year that you're planning to grab life by the ghoulies and make some changes, and if not, why not, then head over to abrilliantgamble.com and click on the Brilliant Gamble online tab at the top of the page to find out more about my online program. Everything I have learned about making changes that stick from my own brilliant gambles and 20 years of helping other people to make massive changes in their life, all of that is in the program. It's really designed to support you at every stage that you're at, from just thinking about change and what changes you'd like to make right through to making it happen. And we have a special offer price right now to coincide with the start of the year, because I really want you to keep your resolutions, and it's very difficult to do without support. So head over to the website now, check it out, and if you have any questions about it or you're wondering if it's for you, then just drop me a line and we can have a chat about it. Do stay in touch on all the social media and everything. I will hand over to Ivy in a moment to explain all about that. But I did promise you an outtake, so here is the moment where my dogs decided to remove everything from the trash can, from the rubbish bin, and rip it all up into tiny, tiny pieces of paper.
Because for the reasons that you say, that, you know, for once we can, for the first time maybe, we can talk about it. And we have access.
Your dogs are enthralled, I can hear.
You know what? I've got to show you what's going on here.
Please do. What is that?
The bin. That's the spot of the bin. Hang on, sorry.
So
you're talking about, you know, keeping your cool. Dogs are just lunatics. You know, this is not the first time that's happened. And in fact, I did a coaching session once, and it was a conference call, it was a group thing. And the dogs were both in the room and doing the same thing, but it's actually slightly more quietly, so no one really knew. And when I'd finished the call, I looked around, and not only was the floor covered in little bits of paper, but there was a couple of little poos there as well. And
all of that happened. This is all helping me not want a puppy for Christmas.
Not helping. All right, I've picked the bin now, so hopefully that will stop.
Visit our website at www.abrilliantgamble.com. There you can get all the episodes of this show, plus read the blog. And on our coaching and classes page, you can find out more about the Brilliant Gamble personal development programs to help you navigate your way through the minefield of life, career and change. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Brilliant Gamble, and on our Brilliant Gamble Facebook page. Finally, please leave a review and star rating for this podcast on iTunes, as it helps people find us and take a brilliant gamble of